everyone. Welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat, episode 33 of 2025. James Gordon joined by Mike Parsons for an off-season edition, and Mike, not a great deal happening at the moment.
Signings seem to be drying up now, don't they? We're at the magic number of 26. What's your feeling over the squad? There's been a lot of noise on social media, hasn't there? I think the main area of concern that people are raising, James, is how many of these, project signings have we got? How many are going to work again? Because we seem to have be accumulating a couple of them again at the tail end of the squad.
Well, you've gone in two-footed there, Mike, straight from the start. I think what we'll try and do, we'll break down the squad, can't we? We'll go through the ins and outs that we've seen since the end of the season. We'll have a little bit of a natter about the fixture format, and we'll test Mike to see whether he understands it. So we could be here for an hour, who knows? But to answer your question, Widnes have got to 20, is it 26? I mean, I'm probably not the right person to ask necessarily. I've switched off a little bit from it for a few weeks, you know, with the season. It's nice to get to the end of the season when you work, you know, when you've been working, sometimes it's nice to not think about it for a bit. It's a funny time, isn't it? Because I think there's so much uncertainty about rugby league in general. There's so much uncertainty over what's going on, not only when you look at, say, the Salford situation, the Featherstone situation. We don't know at the moment. We don't even know who you're playing. You don't know what's the playoff system going to look like, what's the promotion situation going to look like. So there's all that uncertainty, and then you're trying to judge the squad that's being put together. But bear in mind that the people that are putting the squad together have got a budget for that squad based on all of this uncertainty around them. And I know people, I've seen people say, oh, Sheffield are making some good signings, or Doncaster are making some good signings, but the reality is that they'll be signing players that are based that way. And there's just not that, there's not a motivation for Yorkshire-based players to come to Widnes, because why would they? I know we had a couple last season that soon dried up, because there's so many clubs. If you're from Leeds, you're having to drive past quite a few clubs before you get to Widnes.
That's true, and it's something I speak about quite a lot when people say, well, what about this player, and what about that player? And ultimately, for Widnes, we do have a budget. And, you know, we've had people on the podcast, Stuart Murphy, Alan Coleman, obviously relaying the situation at Widnes, which is we don't have a massive playing budget, whether people like that or not. Now, if you're going to dip into the Yorkshire player pool, ultimately, you've got to outbid Yorkshire clubs for them players. And as we've seen already, there is no guarantee of them players being good enough or working out. So straight away, you're taking a risk there of overplaying for a player that potentially, you know, you can get on this side of the Pennines. I think it's something, it's an area I feel that the club still need to look at for the right player, but it has to be the right player, because ultimately look what's happened with Martin Riley and Liam Kirk. They was part of that mid-season reshuffle when things was going wrong.
So to recap then, 18 players have re-signed from last season, and then there's 8 new signings. So the 8 new signings, Jordan Abdul, certainly the highest profile of signing. Jack Bibby, of course, spent the end of last season on loan. You got Nathan Connell from Salford, who's a fullback slash winger. Frank Sargent from Warrington, who's a winger. Kieran Taylor, who from North Wales Crusaders, is a centre slash back rower. Sam Wilde, who we already know, back rower. Toby Hughes, also from North Wales, a halfback, and then we've got Jay Chappellau, who makes his way back to the club, first time he won't have played alongside Ted in their career. So looking at that list, you've got probably the two signings from North Wales, well, even the three signings from North Wales have possibly only come about because of the North Wales situation that's ongoing. I mean, Sam Wilde had signed a 2-year deal at Crusaders. I think Toby Hughes had signed a new deal there as well. So you have to assume that they've sort of become available. Widnes had a little bit of budget and decided to sign them, that maybe it wasn't part of the plan to sign them.
I think the Sam Wilde one, I think that's come at a good time for both player and club, really, because I think it's common knowledge that we was very much after Matty G, but obviously he chose to step into retirement, which obviously left that void of us desperately needing a back row and a quality one at that. And obviously Sam's situation at North Wales Crusade, it was a good fit for both, I think. And I think, you know, you've spoke about, James, in the past about, you know, having a core group of players from Widnes that should never leave. I know Sam's not from Widnes, but I think he is very much that type of player of Sam Wilde should be wearing a Widnes jersey in the Championship.
Yeah, I think, and he fills the void left by Rodri Lloyd, I guess. Well, or Ben Condon, depending on which way you look at it. I think Jack Bibby and Jay Chappellau are solid signings, really, in the front row. But the rest, they're not quite gambles. Gambles is an unfair word. You know, Abdul, there's question marks over his fitness. He's not played for a year. He was at Hull on a 3-year deal, and that came to an end. So I think with Abdul, it's going to go one way or the other. He's either going to be the best player in the league, isn't he? Or it's, you know, it might not work out. Connell, I've heard good things about from Salford. He played a bit last year.
He's the one that intrigues me because through a crazy situation, he's been exposed to Super League. He is a Super League player going off last year. Mm-hmm. So you think dropping down that year will have done him good, but then it is, how good is he? Because some of the scorelines getting pushed past Salford, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
it's hard to judge where he is at in terms of a rugby player, isn't it? Because although he was exposed to that level of rugby, they were getting caned every week.
Well, I think the main thing for me with him is that with Nathan Connell as an example, is Widnes have got a lot of options at fullback. Yeah. And I think that's where, and I know you mentioned before about project signings. We saw some of these project signings last season that didn't quite work out. And I still think people got carried away with that situation. I feel like Widnes recruited them in good faith to try and, you know, almost appease people's desire to have a bigger squad. But I think the reality of the situation at the moment is you can't carry players to develop as a part-time club. You simply can't carry players to develop them because they've got nowhere to play. You haven't got the money really to do it. And ultimately, if you're only training them twice a week, realistically, how much can you develop them? And if you do develop them to be any good, there'll be other clubs sniffing around to sign them anyway. So on that, I did a piece on the website which you shared, Mike, assessing the squad, well, called it a squad depth chart, to look at potential weak spots in the squad. And, well, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out which area it's going to be. But I thought it'd be a useful exercise. If you've not seen it, witnessrugby.com, it's on there. Click on the picture, I think, of Sam Wilde. But effectively, at fullback, you've got five fairly solid options. Connell, we've mentioned. You've got Jake Mason, you've got Jack Owens, you've got Joe Edge, you've got Matt Fleming, whose best games are probably being at fullback. He's effectively fifth cab off the rank now from a fullback point of view. I suppose let's talk about the fullback wingers and centres together, because they sort of move. Because some of them fullback options, Joe Edge, Matt Fleming, Jake Mays and Jack Owens are your centre options as well. I've chucked in Max Roberts and Kieran Taylor in there, although Max Roberts probably now is more morphing towards being a pack option. And then wingers, you've got Ryan Intermite, but Frank Sargent, and then Nathan Connell, of course, on the basis that he played on the wing for Salford last year. How do you assess that back line?
I think, first of all, James, I think in terms of options and depth, it's there. You know, you've got experienced players, you've got players who can play a multitude of different positions across that back line. You know, you've got some experience in there and you've got some youth in there. I think Ryan Ince coming back will be massively important for Widnes. You know, he is the winger for Widnes that scores tries, and we massively missed that last year. But for me, the first season under Alan Coleman, if anything, it was our attack. You know, we was better in defence, we was a better defensive side, and it was about, you know, were to improve going into the next season, and it was about scoring more tries, putting teams away, a lot of close games we was in and coming on the right end of the scoreline, and ultimately that took us into the playoffs. Then we move to last year, and for me, some of them statistics come the end of the season, Reece Williams, your top try scorer, didn't play an awful lot of games. I'm looking at Mike Butt, his try return for a winger, a great player in terms of work ethic, Mike, but he'll never let you down. But ultimately, if you're going to be competing at the top of the championship, you need more tries than what he was producing. Again, Matt Fleming and Joe Edge, in terms of assists, he wasn't in the top three, top four. And again, you know, that's a pivotal area to create, you know, try scoring opportunities. I think Jack Owens, Tom Gilmore, and Depp Patton, who's left the club, they was the top three in terms of your assists. And ironically, two of them probably get the most stick when things go wrong. And ultimately, really, you're looking at the back line and saying, well, where else are your try assists coming from? Where else are your tries coming from? We massively need to improve that going into next season. And for me, I would have had on the agenda of bringing in a strike winger or a strike centre, not because of the personnel or their bad players at all, but just to shake it up a bit and get some of these players, you know, fighting for the shirt. And ultimately, we need more from them going forward.
I think, look, we don't know what the loan market and the dual registration market's going to look like next year. I think they have confirmed the 1 week loan deals now, haven't they? I think. So that'll descend into chaos, no doubt, at some point. But the uncertainty over at the moment, I don't know where Bradford, York, Toulouse are up to in terms of squad size, but there'll be still players being signed. There's still opportunities. I think I saw that Saints have signed Parsley, haven't they? But apparently he's getting farmed out to Bradford, is one that I've seen this week. So there's going to be movement in Super League that potentially impacts who becomes available, but also means that players might get taken out of the Championship that would otherwise be available. But I guess what I'm getting at is, do we feel that getting loan players in is more of a forwards game than a back? Do you see Widnes getting, you know, you had Kai Taylor-A for one game, probably won a match on it against Doncaster. We talk about Widnes having a 26-man squad, but is that a case of, well, there's 26 there, the back division's pretty much boxed off. We're hoping that we might pick up one or two or three forwards on loan every week.
Yeah, and the nature of the Championship, the nature of Widnes and the way it's run at the moment, that is inevitable. It's going to happen. If I was a coach setting up my squad with a budget, a limited budget, without knowing what certain players are on, adding up to our total, the two areas for me which I'd be leaving myself scope to get loan signings in and concentrate on the rest of the squad, I'd be, one would be a winger. You know, like, I think it's easier to go and get a winger from somewhere to fit into your systems. Ultimately, you can simplify playing on the wing. You know, catch the ball, yardage, and obviously, you know, when you get your opportunity and take it, one would be wing and the other one would be prop. Because again, you can simplify that role for somebody coming in on a one-week or two-week basis, can't you? Coming off the bench, you know, wing collision, tackle hard, wing contact in the wrestle. And then if you're going to keep them for 2 week, 3 week, 4 week, you can build on that, can't you?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays. Like, take Warrington as an example. Like, Jake Thulis did really well this year, but of course he only played because Matty Ashton was injured. Now, I mean, if I was Warrington, I'd probably play Josh Thulis at fullback, but it sounds like they're going to play Taylor Ray at fullback and then Ashton will play Josh. So all of a sudden, Jake Thulis has gone from playing every week in Super League to being available to play for someone. It's whether you'd get someone like him or whether that's realistic or not. Touching on the Warrington thing, someone mentioned about Ollie Leyland to me last week, because of course he's still at Warrington. They've got Sneed and Williams, Leon Hayes will be back fit. They've got Ewan Irwin, who's a young lad coming through and doing awesome. All of a sudden, Warrington have got plenty of halfbacks, but the issue is Widnes have got plenty of halfbacks in. The four, we've got Abdul Gilmore, Joe Lyons, and Toby Hughes, who's come on. I know Jamie Dalymore said good things about Toby Hughes, Dalymore being an experienced championship player. Joe Lyons, injured, I think, probably for the first time in his career, sat out the second half of the season. But someone made a good point to me that Joe Lyons has made more appearances than most over the last X number of years at Widnes without ever really being first choice, apart from in the only season Widnes have made the playoffs.
And usually, you know, by hook or by crook, he usually ends up being first choice without the intention being there. I think with Joe Lyons, I think going back to budgets, gets a lot of criticism. People want more from their halfback. It's a pivotal position. And I get why people speak like that. But I think it's a squad game. And you've got to take into consideration, we don't know what certain players are earning. But for me, if, you know, using my intelligence, I wouldn't put Joe Lyons in a top seven, top eight earner in Widnes's team. So then you're looking at, right, who's reliable, plays a lot of games. You know, you've got to run with three halfbacks who can drop in and out. Injuries happen. I do think he is an asset to the squad. And like you say, you know, he was first choice when we made the playoffs. Don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not saying Joe Lyons is, you know, is the answer to everything. I think when he plays with Tom Gilmore, we severely struggle for a long kicking game. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of a player to have in your squad that's reliable and will play for the jersey, I think he's a good player to have in the squad.
Yeah, the stat was that since 2012, most appearances made for Widnes, Joe Lyons is in the top 10. He's eighth. It's Sam Wilde actually in the top 10, which surprised me a little bit. Jack Owens is top, by the way.
Saying that, Sam, he's left, a couple of times, but he doesn't miss many games, does he?
Yeah, so, you know, since 2012, Jack Owens has made 202 appearances and Joe Lyons is there on 152. And then Sam Wilde, they're the only current Widnes players who are in that list. I'd imagine there's maybe a couple who aren't too far off it now. But yeah, the halfback situation last season, you got to a point where there was none on the ground. I guess this season, you're hoping that that's not going to be the case. So we'll see how that develops. So props then on this, going back to the depth chart, the props we've got listed are Liam Bent. Now, I know there's a little bit of a debate over whether Liam Bent is a prop, but he is a prop. He plays, whenever he plays as a prop. So I think you have to list him there. Jack Bibby, Jay Chappellau, Dan Murray, your out-and-out props. And then I've got Morgan McWhirter down. And then Adam Lawton, because of course Adam Lawton's being used as a prop. And you'd have to say that if you look at the makeup of Widnes's squad at the moment, you're probably expecting Adam Lawton to be used as a middle player, would you say?
I wouldn't. You only again have to look at squad selection. I think early doors when he came in, he was playing back row, but as soon as Alan got an opportunity, he shifted into the middle. John Keir did the same. And I do actually understand the reasons for it. Don't get me wrong. You know, it's difficult because we all know Adam's threat is ball in hand, running out wide, 10 yards, 15 yards away from the try line. We all know that. But there is the other side of the game. And he isn't the best defender. And he can be isolated. And many, many times I've been sat in the stand and people have been calling him for his, in quotation marks, lazy defence. And it's not. He's so tall, but he's not his strongest area of the game. And as a coach, you've got to get, you know, the best out of your team, not just one player. So I think that's where Adam ends up being in the middle as a forward. And obviously, you know, he's a bit older now, so he's probably not as quick as what he used to be and agile. But I think there's a world where we can have Adam as a front rower, playing in the front row, defending in the middle. But there's no reason when we're attacking the opponent's try line 10 or 15 out, he can't drift out wide. Mm-hmm. Jack Owen swings round from centre, round to full back to the other side of the field. So there's no reason why we can't do it with Adam. And actually then, he's defending in the middle. Mm-hmm. And when you've got ball in hand, you can float him out to an edge.
I'm surprised that, well, I mean, I don't know. I suppose he's that. I'm surprised that there's never been an attempt to move into 13.
Yeah.
Because he's got the foot, you know, he can play. He's good with the ball. And I'm surprised that that's never been explored. Not just at Widnes, you know, or not just at this period at Widnes, you know, perhaps in the past. Because I suppose the argument is that you want to use him as a runner or as a dummy, you know, rather than taking the ball and then taking it.
Taking a hit. Brandon Lawton's running at you. Two have got to account for it.
Yeah,
that's not enough sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you're thinking really that Langtree and Sam Wilder will be the first choice back rowers.
I think personally, I think it'll be Sam Wilder and Max Roberts.
Right.
But I get your point. Danny Langtree's another one, isn't it? You know, you've got a perfectly good back rower there, but his injury record the past 3 years. Alan will answer it and we'll ask him on the podcast and he'll have good reason for it, but it just scratches my head that he's got a two-year deal. I do scratch my head at it. You know, there's no doubting the fella's quality, and I really like him. I've always been an admirer of him, even when he was at Oldham, and then at Barrow, he really impressed up there. Mm. But ultimately, you know, you need your players on the field, and he just hasn't managed to do that for whatever reason the last couple of years.
So Kieran Taylor is a little bit of an unknown quantity for people who follow the Championship. You would imagine he's not just being signed for no reason, so you'd expect maybe to see him get, and he's got a 2-year deal as well, hasn't he? So there must be some sort of belief that he's going to be in or around the team. We've brushed past hookers because that does itself, Matty Fozard and Jordan Johnston. But loose forward, we've got Nick Gregson, Lewis Hall. I've put Jordan Johnston down as a potential loose forward option, and then Morgan McWhirter as your loose forward option. You would say that Gregson's probably going to be first choice in that position.
Looking at Alan's loyalty and how he set up last year, you'd have to say that. Although, we never really got to see Lewis Hall in full flight when he was returning to the team. You know, it was coming back off a long injury and, you know, he didn't really have enough time to stake a claim for that 13 jersey. But I do agree, when you look at how Alan set his team up and how we played, Nick Gregson seems to be a key figure for him in how he wants to approach games.
I really liked and I've said this before, I think, on the podcast, I really liked the Hall and Bibby thing coming off the bench. It was a bit like Lulu and Isa back in the day. And I actually think, I can't remember what game it was, but Widnes changed from that. One of the games they lost towards the end, they changed that, and I think Hall started. But I actually thought that sort of combination worked quite nicely, so it'd be interesting to see whether we see a bit more of in tandem working like that, because it does make sense when you think about it. If you've got two players who do their stints together, then clearly they're going to get more used to playing with each other. It's less disruptive when they both come on because they're expecting, they know the roles. Whereas if he's coming on for that, you know, if one person's coming on that time, one person's coming on another time, maybe the roles are slightly different. I did my, well, we'll go through our first choice 17. You'll see mine because I wrote it in this article. Mason's your fullback, Hinton Butt your wingers, Owens and Edge your centres, Abdul and Gilmore your halfbacks. Dan Murray and Jay Chappellauer were my starting props. I have a massive issue over Hooker because I think Widnes are better when Matty Fozard's in the team. But if you've got the two of them, I think Johnston has to start because Fozard gives you that off the bench. Now, I wouldn't be averse to starting both of them, but that's a completely different debate. I went with starting Sam Wild and Adam Lawton in the back row. And then I went with Morgan McQuirt starting a loose forward. Let's be honest, he's Australian. He's going to have to play. You know, he's not just over here on an holiday. And, you know, and don't get me wrong, I think he's worthy of playing. And then on the bench, I went for Fozard, Liam Bent, Jack Bibby and Max Roberts. So of the eight signings that Widnes have made, I've only included three of them in the team. Well, actually four. Three in the starting team and then Bibby on the bench.
And going off that, do you think that improves the team?
Well, I mean, I think it's very samey, isn't it, from last season? If you're looking at that 1-13,
do you look at that team and think, even with the new restructure, say top four, let's call it top four, because we've lost three teams. Salford aren't, I think, going to compete near that top four bracket. Does that convince you that that's enough to break into that?
I think it would be a disaster if Widnes don't finish the top four. If Widnes can't finish in the top four in the championship now, and I get that there's an argument about the fixtures, and that we'll go on to that in a little bit. But if Widnes can't finish in the top four of the championship as it is now, there needs to be a rethink about what we're doing. And listen. Widnes haven't got a God. There's no God-given right to finish in the top four for any team. But been in the playoffs once in the last, what are we now, no, six seasons.
I was just about to say, it's about serially underperforming for a number of years.
I think if you were going to, because Widnes are going to be, I mean, are there going to be any better supported teams than Widnes in the league? Because I think Bradford and Toulouse, I think, had higher average attendances. They've both gone. So Widnes are basically going to be the best supported team in the league.
I think we even seen probably Oldham are probably be up there with us. But they flattered us. If you look at their average attendances, the players that they was putting on the field last year, and the crowds was not great. You know, I wouldn't be happy if it was Bill Quinn and Lightfall.
And it's not. And look, it's not the team with the most fans should be top of the league. But
it gives you a massive head
start. But Widnes have got all the ingredients that they should be. I think that's a solid team. Widnes had patches last season where they weren't good enough. But I think there was enough towards the end, that last part of the season. Okay, you missed out on the playoffs in the end, and it was a bit of a damp squib in the end. But that run that they went on, where Widnes were well out of it, let's get it right, and they managed to dig in, get a few consecutive wins and give themselves a fighting chance of getting in. You've not lost. There's no players that have left that really, I mean, Condon's the only one, isn't he, really? But he was a bit of an anomaly because he only came on a pass. Rodri Lloyd had been injured anyway, so wasn't really playing. So you'd say, well, Condon's been replaced by Sam Wild. So I think at championship level, I'm not saying Sam Wild's a better player than Ben Condon, but at championship level, I don't think that's a bad swap. I think Jay Chappellauer adds something to the front row. When you look at the front rowers that have left, he's better than the front rowers, and you know they weren't playing. Benny and Bailey weren't playing anyway. Clearly, there's a big question mark over Abdul at the moment.
I think the signing of Jordan Abdul could have a lot of answers to both how well Widnes do.
But the thing with the thing, but I actually think the Abdul thing isn't as much of a I still think if you put Joe Lyons in that team, I still think Widnes would be competent.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
James, I'm glad you've said that, because that's what I was trying to allude to earlier with Joe Lyons and having him in the squad.
Yeah,
you know, he's good value for the role he's doing.
Don't get me wrong, you want to see Abdul. I want to see Abdul playing every week, kicking the ball to the moon every week. That's what we want to see. But I think, yeah, he's in the first choice team, but I think if you're saying, right, Abdul's not going to make it, Joe Lyons plays, I actually think that's still a competitive team. I think it's difficult as well, because I think a lot of people talk about, Widnes' squad could be better, but what's everyone else's squad looking like? Because
yeah.
I think it's easy to get caught up, Doncaster have signed 4 or 5 good players. Well, what about the other 15 that they've got? Or Sheffield have signed a couple. Well, what about... And don't forget, some of these teams, Sheffield being a good example, have recruited almost a brand new team.
Yeah.
Whereas in theory, and you know, it could backfire, in theory, this Widnes team, the majority of them have played together already. You've got two players coming back who've played with the majority of the other players already in Chapelhow and Wild. Bibby, one of your other recruits, was part of the team last season anyway. There's only really Abdul, who we're saying is going to be part of the starting lineup, that's got to learn about what's going on. And if anything, he'll be helping to guide it round.
And that can be a massive strength for Widnes, and no doubt it is. However, going back to the point of where we've finished in the last 5 or 6 years, on average, you know, it's not the best, and we need to be doing better. And these core players that we are talking about that are possibly our strengths, they have been a part of that. Mm. And I think that's where it is for Widnes and the argument. It's like, are we getting to a point, say if we do not make top four again, actually, is it not the squad depth? Is it actually these core group of players? Are we going to have to make some tough calls on them? Well, do you know what? We've got to try something. Got to try something new here to kick on, because we've been going with it for 3 or 4 years and we haven't quite got there.
The problem is, I think the problem with that, and I don't necessarily agree with that, but the problem is, it's all right saying that, but where are the players coming from? You know, and that is the big problem, that people can complain about it all they like, but that's the bottom line, is the player pool is so narrow. And it's all right saying, right, there's a core group. Well, if you get rid of 10 of them players, where are you signing 10 players? And that's, yeah, and I think, well, that's the,
yeah.
And I know that you can't just hope that it might work after, you know, over a period of time. But at the same time, you've got to find them. And yeah. I think there's clearly massive issues in rugby league, and there's clearly issues this side of the Pennines in terms of, and I know people say, well, all you have to do is throw silly money around like Oldham to get them. Well, that's not a sustainable situation.
I think where I'm coming from is, it's not necessarily the right rip up the 10 players. It's more a case of, doing a review where we've gone wrong the last couple of years. Look at the areas and, right, we've got X player playing in a position. He's a top five earner. What's going to get, without blowing people out the water for players, right, do you know what? We're going to make a tough call on you. And, you know, through a player agent, we have heard about this player. And, you know, you're a top five earner. We're going to take a punt on him instead. You know, not something drastic, but having to be a bit tough on players where, you know, it is Widnes is the home and stuff, but it's also a business and fans want to win.
I think that could happen if players come available.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
and I think that's possibly the issue, is that if player X isn't good, not good enough, if player X is someone you don't want to have, or you want to move on from him, well, you've got to try and find someone better than him. Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah.
And clearly that's an issue at the moment, in terms of, well, it's all right saying, well, you don't fancy player X, but if you can't then find someone who's either as good as him or better than him, it's a gamble. And that's why the project signings, as you've called them, that's why they happen, because you're hoping that you're hoping that you sign Connell as an example and he turns into a gem, he scores 20 tries on the wing, and all of a sudden it's like, well, that was something you weren't expecting to happen.
Yeah.
He's gone above Mike Button or whoever in the pecking order, and now you're stronger. And that,
like, I think going back to the point that you mentioned earlier and stuff, I think message for people who are listening to this and stuff, when we are talking about squad depth and stuff like that, is a week or two before a ball's kicked, have a look at other team, have a look at Doncaster's number 22, 23, yeah, 24, yeah, and compare it to Widnes's number 22, 23, 24.
Yeah, and that's it. I think people see, as I said, four or five signings from clubs. But I think if we do a depth chart, and maybe we have to do that at some point, if you do a depth chart on all these Championship clubs, I bet Widnes's squad probably stacks up, you know, with most of them. Maybe not London Broncos. On the subject of that, then, let's move on to the fixture situation. There was an article that we put out last week. The Barrow chairman, Steve Neely, who I know pretty well, did a video on Facebook explaining the format of how they're coming up with the fixtures. So as you're aware, it's a 21 team. I'll say that loads this year. 21 team competition. You're playing 12 home games and 12 away, but it's the same 12 teams. So you're only going to play 12 of the 20 teams. And that's determined on a pendulum system based on where you finished last season. So the video with Steve Neal is the best way of explaining it. But how they did it was, there was like a circle. Salford was at sort of the top of the circle. And then the second place team was on the right. The third place team was on the left. Fourth place on the right. Sixth on the left, and so on. And basically, wherever you landed on that circle, you played the five teams above you on the circle and the five teams below you on the circle to get 10 games. And then the other two games, they were initially calling them geographical, but I believe that term's now being scrapped because they realised it was ridiculous based on some of the matchups that they've come up. But effectively, it's strategic or whatever you want to call it. Now, this isn't an official confirmation, but the teams that we are expecting Widnes to play home and away next season are Barrow, Dewsbury, Doncaster, Featherstone, Halifax, Hunslet, Oldham, Salford, Sheffield and Workington. And then the two other games, or the two other opponents, we're expecting to be London and North Wales. Now, I have heard of another club who got paired with London who then kicked off and it was subsequently changed. Now, someone's got to play London at the end of the day, and that's just the way it rumbles. But so you end up there with 12 fixtures home and away. The season's due to start January 18th, which is a bit earlier than usual because there'll be 20, although you'll only play 24 games, of course, there's 26 weeks because there'll be bye weeks. You'll have 2 weekends off.
You've obviously got a World Cup, haven't
you? Yeah, the World Cup as well. I initially thought that meant the Championship Grand Final would be played earlier, but that's not the case. They're still expecting the Championship Grand Final to be roughly the same time. The 1895 Cup won't be at Wembley, so I believe that's happening later on in the season. So you won't get this situation at the start of the season where you're playing Challenge Cup, League, 1895 Cup, League, Challenge Cup. That situation won't happen this year. The Challenge Cup is happening earlier in the season, but the 1895 Cup's going to happen later on in the season. The top 10 are going to get in the playoffs. So, well, if you don't make the playoffs, if it's top 10, then I'll give it.
I don't think Alan Coleman would have a job if we're not in the top 10. It's fair to say.
I mean, yeah. So that, I mean, I hope you're picking that up based on me explaining it. But if you go on the witnessruby.com website, I've broke it all down with a bit of a question and answer in, well, as best as I can, based on what I know and what people have told me. Now, clearly, there's controversy over the format because some teams will have easier fixture lists than others. So, Newcastle, as an example, their 10 opponents are effectively the 9 League One teams and Hunslet from last season. And then I think one of their regional ones is Barrow. I can't remember who their other one is. So if you think Newcastle, they've got the easiest fixtures out of the lot. Now, Newcastle have got this new partnership with York, where York are going to send Newcastle all their spare players every week. So all of a sudden, Newcastle will be competitive and probably do pretty well. Someone mentioned Keighley to me before. Keighley finished second bottom. They've recruited fairly well. Usually they're pretty competitive anyway, but they had a shocker of a season last season. They'll probably do well. On the flip side, Salford and Featherstone are going to have very difficult fixture lists, but of course there's worries over, well, whether they'll actually take to the field, which I'm sure they will, but what's the quality of their squad going to be like? So that's it in a nutshell, in a very big nutshell, Mike. What are your thoughts?
I think my main concern, I have about a million concerns. You need to do a podcast just on my concerns. But like, just what stands out from you saying that is, so fast forward to the season after, we're going to finish with a lopsided league, which means then if we're going to be matching fixtures to where people finish on this year, even though it's lopsided, then the fixture list for the year after will be lopsided.
Well, it's going to be, every year it's going to be different. So next year, Widnes's 10 games, well, the 12 games will be against a different team.
Let's say Keighley overachieve and finish fifth. But in actual reality, if everybody was to play them home, each other home and away, they might finish 12th. So the year after, they're going to have rock-solid fixtures, aren't they? Plummet back down the league again. Yeah. And then the year after, they might charge back up the league. So you've got, for me, season upon season, I mean, I have no concerns whatsoever that this nonsense will be over in about 2 years, because we'll be changing, reinventing the sport and wheel again, which we usually do. But if it was going to keep on happening, you're going to have teams, I think, charging up the league, charging down the league.
Well, one point I mentioned to a Championship club chairman this week was that, of course, IMG, there's rankings in IMG based on your league position. Now, clearly, if there's IMG points up for grabs based on your league position, clearly, if you've got easier fixtures, then you've got a better chance of finishing higher up on the IMG scale. What was interesting as well is apparently they've done central funding not based on the IMG ranking, but on your league position. So I think the championship clubs have been waiting to understand what the central funding will be for next season. And I think the expectation was that it would be based on where they came in the IMG ranking. But actually, what I'm told is that central funding is based on league position, which of course then throws into the question, well, what's the point of doing the IMG if they're going to do it that way? I just don't see how it lasts this. I think the video that the Barrow chairman did was excellent in terms of explaining it, but it's still a barmy concept. What I found interesting, and people might have seen this week, they've announced the format for the Challenge Cup, the first round and the second round, and it's going to be seeded. So effectively, Widnes coming in the second round will only play a Northwest team. So there's, I think the first round is they've grouped the amateur teams into Northwest, Yorkshire, and National.
I think you share the post, didn't you?
They've done it. So I think there's 8 Northwest teams in the Championship. They'll be joined by, I think there was the 6 winners of the Northwest ties from the first round. There's, I think, 10 Yorkshire teams who will be joined by the winners of the Yorkshire-based amateur games. And then the 3, what they're calling National, are London, Midlands and North Wales, who then be joined by 3 winners of, or 5 winners of, the ties involving national community clubs, which is clubs from London, from Wales, from Ireland, etc. Now, obviously that means, you know, potentially you Widnes are going to get in the Challenge Cup. You're going to end up with, well, you'd like to, like, you're hoping for a community. I don't know whether they've guaranteed that you get a community club. I'm not quite sure they've gone as far as that. But effectively, Widnes in the Northwest group, there's Barrow, Oldham, Rochdale, Salford, Swinton, Whitehaven and Workington. So you could get any of them or one of the 6 community clubs. So the community clubs in that classed as Northwest, the Police are there. Seaton Rangers, Oral St James, Hares Finch, Blackbrook, Siddle. Siddle have been a bit shortchanged, haven't they, being put in the Northwest rather than the Yorkshire one. Waterhead, Thatcherweath, Rochdale, Lee Miners, Wigan St Jude, and Ince Rose Bridge. So that's the Challenge Cup. But the reason I've mentioned it is because the split that they've done, where they've split the Championship teams into three groups for the seeding for the Challenge Cup, where they've got 8 in the Northwest, 10 in the Yorkshire one, and 3 in the National. Why didn't they just do that with the league?
Well, do you know what? That was what I was thinking as you were speaking earlier. For me, a league should be as fair as possible. And what that means is everybody plays each other the same amount of times, home and away, and the best sides are at the top, and the sides that struggle are at the bottom. Keep it clean, as fair as possible. I understand. And people might have different, whether you agree with it, whether you don't. I understood the League One was getting a bit ridiculous. It had the least funding, and you've got sides travelling the most. Yeah. And something needed to be done about it. Now, there is an argument there of, well, we should be, you know, going with the best team, not managing from the bottom, pulling them up. It should be up to them to be keeping up with the rest of the championships, I suppose. Anyway, that's by the by. Something needed to be done with League One. And that's fine, in my opinion. But this still should have been done in a way where, even if it was done in conferences, I wasn't a massive lover of the conferences either, but I'd much rather have a group of sides competing against each other an evenly amount of times than having essentially, we're still in two leagues, really. It's just together. You know what I mean?
So the Yorkshire 10 plus Newcastle are Batley Jews with Doncaster, Featherstone, Goole, Halifax, Hunslet, Keighley and Sheffield, and then Newcastle. So the Yorkshire 10 could have just played each other home and away, 18 games, and then you figure out a playoff format or something on top of that. Or you could say, well, do you chuck London into that? So there's 11. And then the other group could have been the Northwest 8 plus London, Midlands and North Wales to get 20 games. You could have done it that way.
You could have even just done it randomly, though. It doesn't have to be regionalised.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. I think there's clearly a concern, I think. Well, I say there's a concern, but then I suppose there's always the risk that you're not going to play them games. Anyway, there must be a concern that certain clubs aren't going to play each other, and that's why they've done it this way.
Yeah. I think, to be honest, I think when we originally spoke about this, I think I was saying that about from a witness point of view of who you're missing out on.
Yeah, like you want to play Halifax and Featherstone. But then I suppose that's why you have playoffs at the end. Do you know what I mean? If you had two regionalised leagues and you had a 10 and an 11 and you did top four from each, met in some sort of Super 8 or something at the end. But then I suppose the problem with that is what happens to the rest of the teams, because then, you know, and I just don't think there's a way that you can figure it out. I just don't see them figuring it out, to be honest. I feel like we'll just stumble from year upon year. Now they're probably hoping that some teams will just get fed up and give up.
I think, if we're being brutally honest, James, I think it's quite simple. The RFL could do with that, and they'll find it.
But then the thing is how many would you have to lose to actually make it? Because I mean, they're only going to play 24 games this season, so to get 24 games, you need 13 teams in the league. Well, clearly 8 teams aren't going to go by the wayside. And that's what I think for me is, like, if you could see something sensible on the horizon where it's like, right, okay, we're going to try and get to 18 and you play every team. Well, I mean, they wouldn't do that because 34 is too many, but you could maybe do, you play 18 and you play everyone home and away. You play everyone once and then you play half of the teams home and away.
Well, surely though, like if you had the odd midweek game, like we used to have them in the Northern Rail Cup not so long ago. Surely, I mean, there's got to be a sensible amount, don't get me wrong. But, you know, non-league football, they play midweek.
Yeah.
And like, I know what it means is, look, you know, you see, you'd have to make sure their midweek games are probably, you know, regionalised and sensibly worked out. But if you did increase the fixture list a little bit, what that would mean is clubs would still be getting more money. They'd be getting more money for season tickets. And then you'd be able to increase the player wage a little bit as well, surely, if you could organically do that.
I'd be interested to know what players thought and whether they think they could play more games. Because at the moment, it's a 26-week season. Yeah, you get 2 weeks off. But then, of course, you've got probably 2 80-95 cup games in there. You've got at least one Challenge Cup game.
I get rid of the personally to help that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I get rid of that.
Well, the 80-95 cup.
Are we planning on playing at Wakefield?
I mean,
what a reward. Do you know what I mean?
The 80-95 cup was only created to create more games in the first place anyway. That was why it was there. And don't get me wrong, I think there should be a cup competition because ultimately none of the championship teams are ever going to win the Challenge Cup anymore.
I agree with that.
You could make an argument that actually you'd have a better competition if you did the championship teams and like the NCL teams playing in a cup.
Yeah.
You know, try and get 48 teams together to play in a knockout cup or even 32 teams, you know, whatever. But it's just hard to see how they're going to get down. I can't see how they can get down from 21. Like, cause realistically, 16 probably the absolute most you could get down to and play the moment away,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it a sensible amount. But also, as well, a point for it as well is if you did have more games, you know, there's a way if you've got a squad and I've spoke about, you know, these... You know, project signs, well, there'd be more games for them to get exposure. So then,
because 12 home games is not a lot.
No, it's not at all, mate.
You know,
and it's you know, for a younger, just using an example, Toby Hughes or Frank Sargent, you know, you're probably going to get an opportunity. You've got to take it. Mm. You know, there's not second, third, fourth chance, is there?
Because 12 games, you know, there's 52 weeks in a year, you're playing 12 home games. It's not. Especially when the League One clubs were kicking off because they only had 9 on games. Now, don't get me wrong, 12 is a 33% increase for them.
Yeah.
But I still think 12's not very...
I agree.
Not very many. And I'm surprised it's that low, to be honest.
Yeah.
I thought you'd end up playing maybe 13, 14 home and away and end up playing 28 games, whatever. Now, we don't know what the guarantees are of the 80-95 Cup. We don't know whether... They're guaranteeing your home game like they did the other year, but well, they guaranteed the League One teams a home game. We don't know what that's looking like, but my understanding is season tickets are based on 12 games.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, a player's perspective is the most important thing on that, but like for me, looking at it, of course, the wage has to reflect it, but I think more games means. There's more opportunity for your younger, less experienced players to develop, and then you would have a chance of nurturing some talent through a bit more. But also, let's have it right, James. Playing rugby professionally, it's a privilege. I'd love to do it. You know what I mean? Unfortunately, I wasn't good enough. Mm. But, you know, if someone told me, right, you've got to go and play X amount of games, I'd be like, brilliant. This is what I dreamed of doing from when I was about 5 or 6 years old.
I think the problem is there's less and less people who think like that, isn't there? And that, you know, there's less and less people wanting to play rugby for various reasons. I suppose I still think the solution is the Super League reserve team should play.
Yeah.
I think you could go and have approach... scrap the reserve system, the reserves league, and tender out, say, right, we're going to accept 7 reserve teams to play in the championship, championship one, championship two. And you get Wigan, Saints, Warrington, Leeds, Hull, whatever, would put teams in. And then you'd have 28 teams, split them into 2 leagues for 14. Or go to 2 leagues, 12 if you want. And I still think that is a far better solution than this. Because yeah. I just don't see, I can't for the life of me see how they're going to go from 21 teams to any respectable format. The only way to get from 21 teams to a respectable format is to add teams. And that's ultimately what they were doing. They'd got down, hadn't they, to 23. And they added Gould to make it 24. And then, of course, they lost Cornwall, so it went back down to 23. And then, of course, Super League's expanded, so we went down to 21. But I still think that, and I know people probably disagree with me. Well, no, people will disagree with me. But I still think, what is the point in Wigan having a reserve team playing random fixtures against some Super League teams? Whereas you can put Wigan reserves, play, call them Robin Park Rovers or Chorley Warriors or whatever. They play at Robin Park on a Sunday, 3 o'clock every week. You get the Super League fans will go and watch because Wigan have played on the Friday night or they were away at Toulouse or something. They play in the, they start in League, well, Championship 2. And then Midlands Hurricanes are playing Wigan's reserves at home. And all of a sudden, they've got a bit more, there's a bit more attention on them.
Yeah.
You get a bit more coverage. And then instead of the Super League teams farming out all their players to all these clubs, well, they play for them club. They play for Wigan's reserves. And then everyone's got their own players then.
I was just coming round to that. It'd be interesting to see. I mean, we probably won't see it, but if it was ever to materialise, what that would do to the loan market.
Mm. That's the thing, because I just don't see it. What is the point? Like, Tom Wyatt had just signed for OKR. I think we've talked about him on here before. He was at Widnes for a little bit. He's had 10 clubs.
Yeah.
He's like 23 years old. He's barely played 20 first team matches. And he's had 10 different clubs because he's been at Warrington all that time. And he just gets farmed out. And
you just like, Lucas.
Yeah, you're just like, what is the point? And it's no wonder players get disillusioned with it. So I feel like, for me, that is the solution. And of course, the caveat is that Wigan B can't get promoted to Super League. So if it's like the Spanish football model, they do it in Spain.
Yeah,
they
only
like Barcelona B, Real Madrid B, Atletico Madrid B, whatever, play in the lower Spanish league, but they can only get promoted. They can't get promoted into the, I actually think, I can't remember who it was, but I think one of them got into the second division once. And it's like, well, they can't go any further than that because, you know, yeah, the main team's in. And so I know there'll be people who are like, well, you know, we're Widnes. We don't want to be playing Wigan reserves. We want to be playing Wigan's first team. And it's like, well, okay. Well, we just need to get promoted to Super League then if you want to play Wigan's first team. I just think, at the moment, you've got all these Super League clubs who are full-time sitting on players to play in a competition that no one really cares about. Then they're devaluing all the other clubs that exist because they're just farming players to them like feeder clubs.
And I think as well, James, I think doing it that way, you're also probably helping, well, you definitely are. You're helping youth development from a Super League level because week in, week out, them youngsters are getting exposed to men's championship rugby and not going to 5, 6, 7 clubs to do that. You know, they're playing in a proper structure, you know, and they're going to tactically break down games rather than, you know, trotting over to Widnes with the bag and going, right, just, you know, you're there for 60 minutes, you know, thank you, goodbye.
Well, and, you know, and there's also the fact that there's also
and
the fact
you're at Swinton next week.
There's also the fact that players have said to me that some of the players that are getting sent out just aren't good enough to play in the championship.
Yeah.
That, you know,
we've seen that, and I won't name players, but people sat at home, you can work it out for yourself.
You get, you know, you've got 18, 19 year old lads getting sent to get a whack in the championship, and they're just not good enough, and that's no good for the championship clubs because they want to compete. And it's like, well, if you're Warrington and you're sat on these 20 players under 21 and you think they've got something in them, well, put your money where your mouth is, put them in a team in a men's league and you develop them yourself instead of just expecting
other teams
to do it. And like, I don't know how many reserves, was there 10 teams and there is clearly Catalan and Toulouse don't have reserves because they're reserve team playing France. So already you're down to 12. York have already said they've got a partnership with Newcastle, so they don't need to put a reserve team in because Newcastle are effectively York's reserves.
It'll be interesting how that goes because there's rules, isn't there, of how a certain amount of players is allowed to go.
Well, you're allowed five, aren't you, right? You're allowed five lone players, I think, in your 17.
I think there was a case last year, was it the Toulouse game, where we had to change your registration from a loan to dual reg or the other way around to get.
I would imagine that you'll just see that. There'll be players that are York's players that then get deregistered and registered as Newcastle players. And I think we saw it with, I remember it happening with London Broncos when they were in Super League, might have been 2019, where I think Leeds, there was like three Leeds young lads who went and signed for London because London got promoted a bit unexpectedly, didn't they, when they beat Toronto.
Sorry.
And I'm sure that Leeds deregistered three players so they could sign for London. But we all knew they were going to end up going back to Leeds at the end of the season. But it was because London already had more loan players. And fair enough, that's a loophole in the system. I'd much rather that, by the way, than send random players one week over another. Do you know what I mean? So, if I was in charge, I mean, I'll never be in charge, sadly, but if I was in charge, that's what I would do. And of course, you'll end up inevitably getting, well, if you only have seven Super League reserve teams, what about our club? Because that means our reserves won't have anywhere to play. And it's like, well,
do it all down.
Just don't have a reserve team then. Or partner up with, you know, like Wakefield seems to have a fairly tight relationship now with Dewsbury. So you're thinking, well, Wakefield reserves, do they really want reserves, or are Dewsbury happy to just be Wakefield's reserve side and do it that way? You know, that's how I would do it, but, you know, who knows? So we'll wrap up there, Mike, but we're expecting fixtures at the start of December, we're told.
Yeah.
So it's all fun and games until then. Pre-season friendlies, we're expecting, obviously, at least one, but no announcements on that yet. You would expect that to be early Jan.
Yeah,
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I presume Super League won't be starting until a couple of weeks after the Championship. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with players in them first few weeks because, of course, if Super League teams aren't playing, there's going to be more players available in theory.
I think it's one of them, isn't it? The loan market's always very difficult to navigate early doors because sides don't want to pick up injuries so early on. It's usually when you hit the mid-season, like we've seen last year, John Benison being a great example, players come in that they know that they're not going to be at the club the year after, and that's when, you know, the purse strings get loosened. And, you know, the Championship clubs spend a bit more on loans because they know there's a greater chance of them being there till the end of the season.
Yeah, right. Well, thanks, Mike, and thanks, everyone, for listening. Do leave your comments on the Widnes Rugby League Fans Facebook page. And we'll see you next time.